Hello, everybody, and welcome to Socceroos Game Day, TNC, Saturday morning, TNC, exciting times. You know, there's a lot happening, football versus soccer, it's all going on here. Nick Dabano, Dummy Koolash, and Nick Stoll here today. No Prince Philip, we haven't reanimated the dead today, so we've kept going with the three of us. Stoll, first of all, you've come off the overnight shift. How you feeling, mate? Because you look like you're on your last fumes at the moment.
Oh, well, I thought I was bringing some energy to this pod. I am on my last fumes. I had a full tank of petrol, but guess what happened? England versus USA happened, all right? England, every fucking tournament. Well, sorry, that's a big F-bomb early in the show. I do apologize to Disney, to anyone listening, you know, but I've been driven to madness because England, every World Cup, they give us one of the most stinking performances ever. Algeria in 2010. Costa Rica in 2014, the game against Belgium in 2018, the one against Paraguay in 2006 or whatever. Man, England, all the time, they go in, you know, it's coming home, and then they play at least one game a tournament that is horrendous. And that's what this morning was. For some reason, Phil Foden didn't come off the bench. I don't know what Gareth Southgate was thinking there. But, yeah, that destroyed me a little bit. But otherwise, you know, there was some really good moments. Wales losing to Iran. It wasn't good that Wales lost, but Iran's win was great. So yes, it is. It's been a morning, but I'm looking forward to tonight.
Dummy, how you feeling, mate? Obviously, it's Saturday. It's match day two. We just rolled in the start of match day two with all the other games this morning, as Stoll alluded to. How you feeling right now, mate?
A lot better than what I was feeling 24 hours ago. But, yeah, a couple of interesting games to consume in Group B. Contrasting games, I felt, because Wales-Iran, both teams attacked looking for the win. England-USA, both teams seemed quite content to settle for a point, which I thought was disappointing. And then the two games sandwich in between, I thought Ecuador were really impressive. And then, you know, Qatar, what else we can say about them? Not great. But looking forward to tonight. Obviously, Socceroos in prime time. Must-win game. Be interesting to see how they respond after that France defeat and how we play against a team like Tunisia, because we don't, you know, normally play African opposition. I believe, you know, the last time we played African opposition at a World Cup was Ghana in 2010. I'm not sure if we played many friendlies in the decade since. So it'll be interesting to see how we set up.
Well, let's start off before we get to the Socceroos. We may as well touch on the snooze fest of the tournament, the biggest battle between these two nations in centuries, England, US, old rivals, football versus soccer, bad diet versus bad, even worse diet. Let's get into it. 0-0, you know, as you said, Stoll, England's just terrible football. It looked like, if anything, the US were actually going to win this game. They were the ones actually showing a little bit more going forward. I mean, after the 6-2, I think, you know, some England fans might have gotten a little bit too excited. I mean, what's new? They win one game and apparently it's coming home. Guys, immediate reflections after that game, other than that game was just plain awful.
Well, first I have to address some of the YouTube comments that are coming in. Keep the YouTubes coming in. We love them. Run the Meme says, why still hitting us with the sexy pose? Relax. Mate, I don't know what you're talking about. This is just me not sleeping. And, like, that can't be sexy. I don't even know what I'm doing with my life at the moment. But still, I could still put on a better performance than England, USA. This is why we hate England. Like, people wonder, you know, why were you guys so against England? You guys always do this, all right? You come in with our team is full of Premier League players. You got people on, you know, Talk Sport and whatever those shows are. Oh, you know, Neymar probably wouldn't even get into our team. And Declan Rice is better than every midfielder in the world. Man, what was that? What are you doing? You can't even beat the US, all right? You know, you guys give the US so much crap. I mean, we do it too, but, you know, you're all like, oh, you guys are saying soccer and da-da-da-da. Boom. The US were better today. The US were the better team, actually. Created more chances. Pulisic hit the bar in the first half. So, you know, I just thought, once again, and this showed me, this is why I didn't get excited about England when they won 6-2 against Iran. And everyone was like, oh, England, 6-2, 6-2. No, because A, the XG wasn't that high as well, so they scored pretty much with every shot. Iran also had their second keeper in goals. And B, this is England. This is your football heritage. We know it happens every single time. It's why even in the penalty shootout against Italy, Euro 2020, I knew they'd stuff it up, all right? It's the best part of a World Cup tournament, apart from your team winning, is England losing. And I cannot wait for that to happen. And I'm glad Joey is not on this pod.
Demir,
you're muted, but you are showing off your arms, which is impressive. So if you're listening to the podcast, make sure you go to about 6 minutes in, get a nice shot of Demir's arms.
Sorry, that wasn't intentional, I promise. Disappointing, underwhelming. There's a lot of ways to describe that English performance. You know, Harry Maguire was probably the man of the match. Thought they looked quite lethargic for the majority of it. I think there's a question mark, a question to be asked regarding the fitness of Harry Kane as well. And the changes really didn't inspire much confidence. You know, you're bringing off Jude Bellingham and putting on Jordan Henderson.
Yeah, what? What was that?
What's the goal there? And then, obviously, the big one is not introducing Phil Foden. Now, I've seen a snippet of the post-game where Southgate says he basically wanted someone to keep the ball and he thought that Jack Grealish was better equipped to doing that. How about someone who's, you know, going to be quite progressive with the ball going forward and potentially create opportunities for you? Opportunities that England were starved throughout the course of the game. You know, if you are going to say one team was better than the other, it was probably the US. I thought in midfield, Adams and Musa were immense. They could do with a number nine, a natural number nine. And I think, you know, Tim Ream's been a welcome addition to the centre of their defence because his experience really showed as well.
Barna, you're the host.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, no, sorry. Just cut out for like 2 seconds.
We shouldn't let you host. The microwave is going to take you down eventually.
It wasn't my end, though. I think there was just a lag coming through from the other end. I don't know. There's no microwave on this time.
Demir stopped talking, and there was a perfect time for the host to come in, and you just looked at us like, maybe, oh, okay, cool. You're watching a bit today.
It's you know, it's day six of the World Cup, mate. Like we're all feeling it right now, you know, with all the sleep deprivation. Look, you know what? Like, it's very disappointing that England didn't come out and win this game, but at the same time, like,
I think it's disappointing they didn't lose.
No, that's one thing. Disappointing from their standpoint, but from the rest of the world, it was fantastic. you know, do you remember in 2010 when the US got a point after the Rob Green fumble and they had USA win on the front page and the 1-1? I wonder if they're going to run it back again. USA win. I guess it's different because the US is still like on the outside looking in to actually progress, but still in charge of, really in control of their own destiny. But for England, I mean, this is the game they've got to win. Like, if you want to win the tournament, you got to beat the US. Like, no disrespect to the USA, but if you want to send the statement, these are the games you've got to win. Like, you can't just be rolling out 0-0, trying to keep the ball in those moments. You need guys who are going to be able to actually come on and change the game. And I just don't understand how you can leave someone like Phil Foden on the bench. And even when you look at some of the other guys they had on the bench, even someone like Conor Gallagher, you know, even Callum Wilson, just something different. Look to try and show some impetus in those sort of games. But to the US's credit, I mean, they don't play the best brand, but they defend pretty well. Like, I mean, I know they weren't really tested, but Zimmerman and Ream, they do a decent job down there. Pulisic had a really good chance to score this morning. If he'd scored, he would have probably been sold on the spot by Chelsea. Probably wouldn't have been welcome back in London. But it was a good moment, I think, for the US because at the same time, as much as they'd be disappointed to be on the outside looking in, a win against Iran, against, I thought, a very good Iran side yesterday, they're in dreamland. They could still actually top this group if Wales do, you know, the rest of the world a favour. But we'll see what happens by the time that rolls around. But yeah, I think, you know, for England, it's disappointment, but it's nothing new. I had this feeling. I'm like, if it's going to be the most England performance, they're going to end up stuffing it up at some point. If it's not against the US, it will be against Wales.
Well,
But do you not think that it was also an opportunity miss for the US because they had a fantastic chance to take control of the group and basically go into the last game only needing a point, make a run, attack them, and like beating England, it would have been big, big news in the US. They probably would have gotten an ESPN 30 for 30 at some stage because of it, maybe even a movie deal. And I just thought Berhalter was way too pragmatic. Aronson and Reina got 20 minutes plus stoppage time in between them to do something. And you saw it even with the last set piece. He was kind of motioning, I think, to Pulisic to, essentially slow it down, let's run the clock here. And they went for a short free kick instead of bumping the ball up into the box and hoping the likes of Ream or Zimmerman get their head onto it. I just think, we saw the pragmatism of both managers in full display. And potentially, while there is an element of the US competing against a bigger brother, against a footballing nation, and not only matching it, but looking better for large portions of the game, there's also that opportunity lost, as in, hey, you could have actually beaten them here if you took more risk.
Is well, they're a footballing nation, England, but they lost against the soccer nation. Like that's like they drew, it felt like a loss. I mean, to me, you say it like that, but in America, they're probably treating it as a win. I've seen the Twitter discourse, and they think it's hilarious that they've held England to a draw. And to be honest, I think it is too. But no, you make a good point. Like they were there right for the picking. But it's not completely disastrous. It's not as if like they're taking on a no disrespect to Iran. But taking on an absolute powerhouse in that last game, it's actually, I think, it's going to be a really intriguing game, and they probably would consider themselves a red hot crack to come out and beat Iran and qualify for the next round. They're actually in a pretty good position. So
You know
I think
what?
if
They
anything, the Wales game was the missed opportunity.
should have beat Wales. And USA Iran was always going to be an interesting game because of the geopolitical thing. But now it is really set up to, winner takes all, winner's going to go through. So it's a great match day three game. And Wales, Iran looked pretty good as well. So yeah, it is an interesting one from the US. But honestly, I'm pretty impressed by them. Like, I thought they were decent against Wales in the first game. I thought they were decent today. This isn't a tournament for them. It's about what they're going to be like in 4 years on home soil. So yeah, US one to watch. It's going to be good match day three.
Yeah, let's move on from this game before we incite Joey and he returns and comes on and gives us all a serve about England. Let's look ahead first before we start looking back at the rest of the games last night. Let's look ahead to tonight, 9 p.m. Socceroos, Tunisia, massive game, all on the line. It's been billed as one of the biggest games, I think, in Australian football for quite some time. Obviously, not just being in the World Cup, but prime time here, in the country on a Saturday night. It couldn't be scripted any better for getting eyeballs on the game. Big turnouts out in public venues. Looking from a Melbourne standpoint, it's going to be a beautiful day. We've had so much rain. It's actually now we're getting back to what it should be. We had Sydney weather for about a month, but now we're getting back to the way it
Hey.
should be.
Hey, whoa, whoa, whoa. Sydney might have a lot of rain, but we have a lot of sunshine as well.
Yeah, but when there's a bigger venue, you
Don't
guys
act like the
always pop
weather
in
is better in
actually.
Melbourne. All right? You get that Arctic chill that comes up, like literally from Antarctica. The wind comes up and just hits you all winter. All right?
Yeah,
Don't give
but
me
hey,
another.
winter's good down here, man. Winter's beautiful
Blah,
down here. Like,
blah.
it's beautiful, beautiful place, beautiful place. Anyway, soccer is Tunisia, all to be played for tonight. Obviously, the big news overnight, Frank Karacic going to start, Nate Atkinson out with an injury. Let's just get into the nitty-gritty. Can you see that being the only change? Do we see Aidan Hrustic as well coming in? How do we see the lineup looking for tonight?
They need Hrustic to come back in. They need someone who can keep the ball, who can progress the ball up the field, who can create chances. The very few times that we got into the final third against France, man, we looked panicked. We did not look calm at all, composure. Hrustic brings that in. I don't know what his fitness is, but honestly, if he's even 80%, I'd roll the dice. All right? It's a World Cup. This game, if we win it, we're in with a great chance. If we lose it, we're gone. Even a draw, I don't think you know, I think we're gone as well. So absolutely need to kind of roll the dice on this one. Hopefully Hrustić comes in. It also be interesting, I think, to see, you know, Duke. Does Duke hold down? I know Arnie likes him, but I think, I guess it depends on, you know, how he wants to play. I thought it was even a bit strange that McLaren didn't see minutes against France, given the way that, like, France played such a high line. And to get kind of McLaren in behind with his runs, I thought that would kind of make more sense. So I was surprised he didn't get minutes. It's going to be a very interesting one. But yeah, definitely we need for a stitch on the pitch.
David?
Yeah, echo the thoughts of both of you in that I think Hrustić needs to return into the starting 11. We need someone who, upon receiving the ball, can not only keep hold of it, but offers a lot of creativity, which, you know, no respect to Riley McGree, he's probably not at the same level. Obviously, Karadžić is coming in for Atkinson, and the only other change I'd make is potentially alongside Harry Suter. I feel more comfortable with either Bailey Wright or Miloš Deganek partnering the Stoke City defender. Aside from that, I don't think that there's going to be any other changes. I think Arnie will stick with Mitch Duke up top, and if we are to see one of the two come off the bench, I'd probably say it's Jamie McLaren, because Cummings didn't do a lot in that France game, but there's also the question mark in relation to Cummings and Quall. Did they get put into a no-win situation where they were expected or tasked to do a lot? And, you know, Arnie's going to look at that and probably say, they didn't make much of an impression. Okay, let's give an opportunity maybe to a Jamie McLaren, maybe to a Marco Tilio to occupy those roles off the bench. But we'll see how the game plays out as well. Like I think most of you, I was pretty impressed by Tunisia in the first game. They could have easily come away from that one with all 3 points against a good Denmark team. Not a great Denmark team, but a good Denmark team. And yeah, like I said, prime time, Fed Square is going to be packed. I'm sure the pubs all across and bars across the country will be packed. And it'll be good to see the Socceroos again, attracting the mainstream media attention that they deserve.
Just the biggest thing for me on this game is taking the crowd out of it, because it is going to be hostile as all hell. Like, 30,000 Tunisian fans apparently going to be packed in. Like, there's a massive Tunisian community in Qatar. You expect a lot of fans would have travelled as well from Tunisia, given the close proximity where the two nations are. And the first 10, 15 minutes, I think, are going to be make or break. And I would not be surprised if Australia just try and take the complete sting out of the game, and whether it's try and hit them early with a goal or just try and play calm and just slowly take the team out of it. Don't make it a basketball game in the first 15 minutes where Tunisia are going to be going at you. And the one player that I sort of want to highlight for Tunisia is Leiduni in midfield. And we spoke about him after, you know, the Denmark-Tunisia game, how he put in that massive challenge on Christian Eriksen. He started pumping up the fans and everything. I'm telling you, like, don't be surprised if we see some of those challenges early where the Tunisian players are going to try and get the fans behind them, try and galvanize the fans. And Australia have been in these situations before where they've played real hostile games at, whether it's been World Cups or qualifiers. I mean, we think back to 2014 against Chile when it was in Brazil. And, you know, those first 15 minutes where Chile just went bang, bang. I know that Chile team was a lot better than this Tunisia side. And then we think back to even World Cup qualifiers against Uruguay and Iran. And obviously that's gone way back. But the importance of taking the crowd out of it, like, it can't be understated. Like, we can look at the X's and O's and everything, but these Tunisian fans are going to come out in full voice and just try and put the Socceroos off. Just quickly, in terms of what I think will happen starting-wise, other than Karadžić, I think it's a no-brainer. Aiden Hrustić has to play. Even if you're going to get 60 minutes out of him, 60 minutes could be gold. One pass is all it's going to take, and just a bit of creativity. Someone who can just, you know, play that final ball. And that's what we're really lacking. I think it's going to be so important.
Set pieces as well. You know,
absolutely. Absolutely.
There was a lot of talk of Goodwin. His crosses are okay, but like in terms of direct free kicks, Hrustić is the only player who can actually put it in the back of the net from a direct free kick. So that could be super important today.
Absolutely. And the other one as well, good point there, Tamir. I would change the centre-back pairing. I'd look at bringing in Bailey Wright to play alongside Harry Suter. I think that as much as I like, you know, that they went for the Suter-Rolls partnership, I just think they haven't played enough football together. And I think you need to get someone in who has played, you know, not just football, you know, together, but football in general, because, you know, Rolls and Suter are coming off these long injuries. I think we're going to keep the squad fresh as well. So we'll see what happens today. But guys,
but don't worry about France. It was just a friendly. So there's no.
It was just a friendly, guys. Don't worry.
We're just warming up. Yeah. You know what it reminds me of? Like when you're playing like a pick up game of like football or something, and you're beating someone, I don't know, 4-0, and then they score like two goals, and they go, oh, yeah, we're playing serious now. All right, great.
And also, like, you know, the famous, you know, oh, guys, it's only 1-0. Don't worry. Keep going. I think the last thing I want to make on this game is I wouldn't be surprised if we actually see at one point either the Melbourne City Trident in the front three of Lecky, McLaren and Tilio, or whether they're all on in that front three, Tilio sitting in behind, or the Mariners duo coming on again. I think that's a bit of an understated storyline, having players that have played together at club level that understand the synergy and what works. I would not be shocked if at some stage in this game we see that happen. So before we move on from this to the other games, let's stick our necks out. What are our predictions? Are we going to win? Are we going to still be alive going into that last game against Denmark? Is it going to be disappointment? Is it just going to be another draw? It's going to be like when we played Denmark in 2018. What's the go?
I don't know. I really obviously would love us to win. Oh, I think it's going to be very tight. I think it's going to be 1-1, maybe 1-0. Either way, I think it's going to be a very, very tough game. I think if we do win, it's a 1-0 win. So, look, let's hope. But if I had to put my money on it, I'd say 1-1 draw.
I'd probably lean towards Tunisia 2-1. Harry Suter to score Australia's goal. But over the course of, I guess, the last couple of days since the France game, I have been feeling a bit more confident about Socceroos going into this game and potentially getting a point out of the game. But, you know, I do wonder if they get into a situation where it is 1-1 in the 80th, 85th minute, whether they do chase it and how strongly they chase it, because you'd assume that they would want to do that, particularly given that Denmark and Tunisia drew, you know, France may beat Denmark and the Socceroos may just need a point if they can get a win tonight. So it'll be an interesting test for Graham Arnold, the manager, to see how he approaches the game tactically and his game management during the course of the 90.
So just Jack coming through here in the comments asking, can you see a change in the midfield pivot? Thought Backus looked good when he came on and it was telling Arnie went with for him over Devlin versus France. I mean, you make a good point, Jack, but I don't think he's going to make any changes other than Rustich. I think he's going to stick with Moy and Irvine as well. I would tell be what, very surprised.
Moy was not good against France.
Yeah, but France, you know, he's stuck with Moy like all the way through. Like personally, I would start Devlin if I'm being like I was the coach. But he is stuck with Aaron Moy. Like, even when he wasn't playing at club level, he was still putting him out there for 120 minutes, even against Peru. So I would be shocked if Aaron Moy was dropped, to be honest.
And Keanu Backus seems to have really impressed Arnie, because you cast your mind back to that second New Zealand friendly. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he was the last of the three central midfielders in contention for a World Cup spot to come on. I think it went, you know, Jeanreau, Metcalf, Devlin and Backus received the least minutes. He's leaped ahead of both Jeanreau and Metcalf. And I do wonder whether him getting minutes towards the end of that France game is basically an indication that Arnie will use him ahead of Devlin, or whether it was just a case of let's get, you know, Backus and Degenek a World Cup experience. The game's lost, but, you know, let the boys have their moment of, you know, sharing the pitch against some great players. I hope, you know, that doesn't sound patronising, but yeah, I do wonder, it's been this, you know, incredible rise for Keanu Backus, given that he was at Western Sydney Wanderers last season. He was okay in a pretty disappointing team, but here he is getting minutes in the World Cup. And, you know, as Jack said, potentially in contention to start if Moy is not deemed up to standard for tonight. But I would be very surprised if Aaron Moy gets dropped, irrespective of how poorly I think we all collectively thought he played against the French.
Yeah, I just don't see it happening. And you make a good point, Demir. Just going back to that before we move on, I mean, they had Metcalf, Jeanro, and Riley McGree starting that game against New Zealand. And Backus only played 7 minutes off the bench. Like, he literally was just brought on as, you know, just to get his cap. And in the end, you know, obviously he's gotten the opportunity. We'll see what happens, whether that comes to fruition, whether he plays again today. But result for me, heart says 2-1 Australia, head says 1-0 Tunisia. And I am very worried about how what the absolute explosion on soccer Twitter if Australia does lose tonight. But I'm hoping that maybe we can get a win today. Let's move on, guys. Let's quickly touch on the rest of the games from last night. Speed through them all, proper espresso edition. First game of the night last night. Demir, we watched the game together with Lockie. Wales, Iran. Iran, 2 goals in second half stoppage time. I mean, the clamour on social media afterward was, yeah, that's a good thing about having 9-10 minutes of stoppage time because we get moments like this. But let's be real. Iran deserved to win that game. They had so many opportunities to win it. Wayne Hennessy sent off for a, you know, karate kick, you know, just kicked him in the side of the head, you know, sort of moment. I don't know how he wasn't sent off in the first place. But Iran, massive win given the context, what's going on, the big loss, everything that's going on back home. And right now, in a great position to progress from Group B.
Yeah, indeed it was. And I thought that they were excellent. I mean, what is going on, guys? Carlos Kiros coach team scoring 2 goals in consecutive World Cup games. I mean, the last 2 World Cups that he's taken Iran to, they've scored 1 and 2 goals, respectively. So 3 goals across 6 games. And here they are with 4 goals across 2 games. And it's also the first time that Iran, at their 6th FIFA World Cup, has actually scored more than 2 goals in the group stages. So they've actually doubled that by scoring 2 in both games. I thought the introduction of Azmoun was excellent into the starting 11. He was immensely unlucky not to have scored in that second half. He first hit the post. Then Iran hit the top of the post again, or side of was it a crossbar or a side of the post? I can't recall. And then he, you know, gets his head on it, but it goes straight into Hennessy's arms. I thought that they were the better of the two teams. 2-0 was probably a fair reflection of the game, but they did also have a lot of bad decision-making going forward. And you could just see Taremi getting increasingly more frustrated. And my, oh my, what a goal in the 98th minute to win it for him and then the breakaway to make it 2-0. And like Nick said earlier, it's, you know, if that game wasn't big enough already, that USA-Iran game, because keep in mind, back in 98 when they played each other, it was the last group game and both teams were out. So it was a symbolic victory for Iran, but it didn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things tournament-wise. This is basically a winner-takes-all. Iran can, you know, go through with a draw, but I'm sure they'd also like to beat the Americans. And, you know, will we see the US be more attack-minded, a bit more progressive? And I do also wonder, you talk about the off-field stuff, a win against the US is a big win, not just for the Iranian team and all the supporters in the stands that do have conflicted feelings about the flag that those players are representing, but it's also a big win for the same Iranian government that has been, you know, quite repressive towards protesters over the course of the last 2 months. And yeah, it's just one of those games where you have a lot of different dynamics operating and it'll be interesting to see what happens. Back to this game, Wales, I thought, in comparison to the way that they finished the US game, were poor. Kiefer Moore didn't have a great game. His touch let him down a few times. Joe Allen was probably not in in a state to actually play that game, given how poor he was when he came on. And gee, that Hennessy red card. I mean, the fact that the referee went for a yellow first. I mean, there's a few things in relation to his particular situational management there that I just didn't like. You know, firstly, he hasn't given out a direct red card. Secondly, he hasn't checked on Taremi. Thirdly, he hasn't immediately called over the physio. It was just, you know, you've done everything wrong in that instance. And, you know, while we do, you know, criticize VAR so often and frequently, this was actually an instance of it being applied correctly to fix a clear and obvious error. Like, we often, you know, sort of debate what does clear and obvious mean. Well, there it was in full show.
Yeah, look, just quickly for me on this game, Wales were not good. They were not good. I mean, you know, Aaron Ramsey and Gareth Bale were quite pedestrian, I thought. They didn't really offer a hell of a lot. Quite symbolic of where Wales are at, you know, probably as a footballing nation in terms of, you know, the stocks they've got and the players they've got coming through. It's probably not, you know, if they're still relying on Ramsey and Bale now, like at this stage of their career, kind of shows exactly where they're at. And even Joe Allen too. But it's a massive win for Iran and good on them. They responded well. Just in regards to Alan Riley's comment, can we talk about how dripped out Quidosh was last night? Yeah, mate, you know what? He looked good. He looked good on the touchline. His football isn't always very good, but they were devastating on the counter-attack yesterday. And as you mentioned to me, Sada Asman was fantastic. He can battle it on with that injury. Like, I thought he was going to come off a lot earlier, but did quite well. So sets up for that massive match day three on Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. Yep, so that's looking like a huge, huge, huge morning. And also, if Wales can pull off a win against England, make it even more exciting nonetheless. Damir, yes?
Speaking of Riley's, we watched a game at the Imperial and Mark Riley, the chief political reporter of Channel 7, was an interesting observer as well. And he seemed to, you know, take great delight when the Iranians scored. And I think, you know, for neutrals, there's a lot out there in relation to that Iran team and the conflicted, I guess.
He's a big supporter of the Ayatollah, Mark Riley.
No, but like we did see the scene pre-game when the anthems were played. You know, there seemed to be a degree of reluctance with the players singing it after initially not singing it against England, and then the cutaways to the, you know, the crowd and that one particular gentleman who just basically broke down. You've got tears in the eyes of a lot of other Iranian supporters there, and it's, you know, it's a tough situation to be in, and I can't really think of any situation quite like it in recent World Cup history. I'm not sure if you guys can, but it seems like if there has been, you know, political factors that have affected the team, they've done so before the World Cup or in the immediate aftermath of a particular World Cup.
No, nothing that immediately comes to mind with that one.
I can't remember my own address right now. I'm that tired.
Hey, Stoll, before we let you go, just quickly wrap through the last two games. Quick speed through it. Ecuador getting against the draw against the Dutch.
I'll tell you right now. Ecuador 1-1, and Valencia, six consecutive goals. The Netherlands were, apart from Gapko's goal, which was amazing straight away, horrendous. Horrendous, the Dutch. All right. No good at all.
In a bit of trouble there, the Dutch. But Qatar, also, yeah, Qatar, yeah, see you later.
Well, see I was going to say, Qatar, man, you had 12 years. You spent all this money. You built a $1 billion complex. You got the best coaches from Barcelona. You know, you set up a thing in Senegal. You bought a club in Spain. You bought a club in Belgium. All this money you spent for what? Zero puntos. All right? Zero. Good luck. Thanks and success. Goodbye to you. I hope I don't see you again.
Yeah, well, we're probably going to have to see him again because when it expands to 48 teams, they'll probably keep qualifying. But in regards to that, obviously big result as well for Senegal. Talking about big games in the final match day three, Senegal versus Ecuador, even the Dutch game, like if Qatar gets something from that, the Dutch aren't safe. Like it's going to be really, really intriguing.
Come on, Nick.
Look, do you honestly think Qatar will get something out of that game given what we've seen?
You never know.
Having said that, I do think that in both games, the Netherlands were actually the poorer of the two teams. and hit out with 4 points. This morning, you know, you saw Plata hit the crossbar. Ecuador really unlucky. I thought it was quite interesting. De Ligt drops to the bench after basically publicly commenting on the fact that he feels uncomfortable playing as a right centre back and coming up against, you know, fast wingers. And sure enough, Timber's into the starting 11. But I tell you who'd be really happy with, you know, what happened during the course of this game and also the Dutch first game. It's PSV, because Gapco's stock and his price tag will only keep rising. I think, you know, he's naturally been one of Holland's or the Netherlands' few shining lights this tournament. I do think they're also missing Wijnaldum in midfield, but they're not looking convincing. And even if they are to top this group, which I think is expected, given that they will probably have a favourable goal difference following on from their game against Qatar, you know, if they play, whether it's Iran, whether it's the US, even if it's England, I'm just, yeah, they're there for the taking. When it comes to the Senegal-Qatar game, look, I thought, you know, Qatar looked better in that second half. Mendy was forced to make this one tremendous save. Montari, who I thought looked okay when he came on against Ecuador, scored that goal, and it's good that, you know, their supporters, however many of them there actually are, were able to celebrate in that moment of having a World Cup goal. It came when the game was still in contention. But Senegal, just too strong. Having said that, though, if I was to fancy either Ecuador or Senegal in the final game, I'd probably be leaning towards Ecuador based on the evidence of the two performances that we've seen. I think, yeah, Senegal is really missing Mane. And even last night, I thought Kouyaté's absence in midfield was sort of evident in that second half as they were starting to lose control of the game. When they were 2-0 up and allowing Qatar to create a lot of attacking opportunities.
Yeah, just quickly, you know, they've got three sort of players out who are playing at big clubs, as you mentioned to me. No Mane, no Kouyaté. Starting left-back, Fode Ballo-Touré, who obviously is at AC Milan as well, missing from now the opening two games. So they're a bit decimated, but they're in a very good position still to progress. Massive game coming up in that final group game, but all that Ecuador need is really a point. So who knows what happens with that one. Hey, guys, before we go, the other three group games tonight, other than obviously the soccer is an easy game, we've got France, Denmark, Saudis versus Poland. So another chance to see Herve Renard in the flesh and, you know, his big pre-game speech with his translator, which I love that video, by the way, a bit of FIFA World Cup All Access, sensational work there. And also as well, Argentina, Mexico, so much on the line there. So let's get our predictions. Let's start off with Denmark-France, 12 a.m., straight after the Socceroos game. A lot riding on this, at least from an Australian point of view, depending on what happens tonight. How do we see this game playing out? Stoll, you're on mute.
Oh, sorry, which game?
France versus Denmark. Let's get predictions.
1-0 France.
I'm here.
1-1.
Yeah, I'm going with a 1-1 as well. I get a feeling Denmark are going to get something from this game. I think they're going to be very strong defensively as well. Hey, Saudis versus Poland. Is the magic going to continue for Saudi Arabia, or can you see Poland getting something from this one? You're on mute again.
I think
you're
on mute.
1-1.
Dummy.
Interesting. This game has been held at Education City Stadium. It's the third game to be held there, and we still haven't seen a goal. Denmark, Tunisia, 0-0. Uruguay, Korea, 0-0. So I'm going to go for 0-0.
Give me 1-0 Poland. I get a feeling that Poland are going to win this one. Robert Lewandowski with the goal. Argentina, Mexico. Are we going to see Argentina bounce back? There's always controversy when these two teams play as well. So I'm going to predict controversy and an Argentina 2-0 win.
Argentina. I was going to say Argentina 2-0, but keep in mind that if Argentina lose this game, they would become, what, second or third team, depending on how the earlier results go, to be eliminated from the tournament. So who would have actually thought that? Not that I think they'll lose it, but it will be an interesting and suspenseful 90 minutes.
Argentina 5, Mexico 1.
Wow. You're going for a real clapback. You think like there's going to be a statement game?
Nah, I don't know, bro. Like, I'm tired. It's Messi. You know, he's going to do something amazing. Come on, Messi. Come on, Messi. Let's do something incredible. Let's get a hat trick. Let's shut everyone's mouths. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll stick to that. We'll see what happens. It's going to be an intriguing night of action, obviously. You can all catch it on SBS, you know, big game, 9 p.m. all the way through till 6 a.m. So four huge games. But, of course, Socceroos tonight against Tunisia is the big one that we're all going to be keeping our eye on. So tell on Socceroos, you know, give us something. Give us something. We want to have a good night. We don't want to be, you know, heading in tomorrow feeling like absolute crap after hopefully not a loss. So let's hope they turn around and get ourselves a result. But, yeah, we'll see how it all plays out. But, guys, Stoll, go get some rest, mate. You look like you're about to pass out on stream. Dummy, thank you again for jumping on board. We'll be back, we think, tomorrow for a bit of a Socceroos Tunisia post-mortem. Myself, Nick Tabano, Nick Stoll, Damir Kulash, it's goodbye for now, and thanks and success.